Hello, everyone. Welcome to C-Suite Talks, a podcast that takes you inside of the most interesting business and industries today. We explore career success and how we can make a difference. We invite you to join us on this journey, and welcome to C-Suite Talks. I'm Beth Hilbing, co-CEO of C-Suite. It's an international association for executive women, and I am here along with Diane Gubin.
Hi, I'm Diane Gubin, co-CEO of C-Suite, and this week we are talking to Jenny Sade, who is the Chief People Officer of PLBY Group Holdings, and that is a holding company for brands, including the iconic Playboy. So let me tell you a little bit about PLBY Group. They connect consumers around the world with products, services, and experiences to help them look good, feel good, and have fun. PLBY Group's flagship consumer brand, Playboy, is one of the most recognizable iconic brands in the world, driving more than $3 billion in global consumer spend annually across 180 countries and is in the top 20 most licensed brands globally. PLBY Group serves consumers in four major business categories: sexual wellness, style and apparel, gaming and lifestyle, and beauty and grooming. Today, the PLBY Group, together with its subsidiaries, engages in the development and distribution of content, products, and high-profile events that embody both eroticism and fine art, alongside wellness and apparel retailing. Wow, that's a lot, Jenny. Tell us about Playboy. It was Playboy, and now it's PLBY Group. Tell us how the brand has evolved and what is the current business model.
Thank you. Yeah, and that was a mouthful. I appreciate you making it through that. So yeah, Playboy is at the helm of a massive consumer products company. We like to think of ourselves as kind of the original lifestyle brand with a 67-year legacy. So today, Playboy, which is our flagship brand, as you mentioned, is one of the most iconic and valuable brands in the world. No brand gets recognized quite like our rabbit head. In fact, we drive, as you mentioned, $3 billion in consumer spend around the world with licensed products in over 180 countries. I think that a lot of people, when they think about Playboy, they may think about the magazine. We actually haven't had the magazine in quite some time. It's really been this focus on consumer products and really resonating with this next generation of consumers. So providing a platform that we think can be synergistic to promote our own owned and operated brands and ultimately create a brand that we believe can be the leading pleasure and leisure company in the world under this PLBY Group parent entity.
But there's still the website, right? I went to the website. Isn't it a subscription model at this time?
It's not. So our website right now is a shopping experience. You can buy a bunch of different lifestyle products that help you look good and feel good. Our revenue model right now, which might help to articulate, is focused on two kind of key models. So one is our direct-to-consumer sales, and the other is our licensing sales. Both we do really big businesses in. And we're focused on those four kind of key categories in both of those revenue models. So sexual wellness, which I think we're well-positioned and probably most well-known for. Style and apparel, which is also huge for us, really big for us in China, specifically growth in India, gaming and lifestyle, and then beauty and grooming, which is more of an emerging category for us. So the hope and I think the opportunity for us is that we've long believed that this Playboy brand could serve as this platform to acquire and launch other businesses under this pleasure lifestyle umbrella. So in December of 2019, we made our first acquisition, which was Yandy, which is a lingerie business that is based in Phoenix. And then this February, we made an additional acquisition of a business called Lovers, which is 42 retail stores here in the U.S., which gives us an exciting kind of brick and mortar footprint for our sexual wellness consumer.
Are the stores open now across country, you know, with COVID? Are they starting to open back up or have they been open?
They are. Yeah, they're opening. They were actually open through a majority of it and certainly more open now, which has been exciting. Obviously, our online businesses have done really well during COVID. It was an interesting pivot that I think none of us expected, but the business has weathered it well. And I think, in part because we're so diversified in the products and services that we offer.
So, Jenny, historically, Hugh Hefner started it, and then his daughter ran it, and then it was private equity. And now what? Like, what is it now?
We're a public company. We went public in February, which was really exciting, through a SPAC process. And it's, I think, what was once a family-owned business is now a really large kind of global entity that's run by a fantastic management team. We've assembled a lot of really fantastic talent. It's been kind of an exciting trajectory, and it's a really professional organization. I think because of so much of the content we create and so many of the products that we provide are so fun, are sort of pleasure and leisure and lifestyle. I don't know what people anticipate when they walk through our doors, but it's a really impressive professional kind of operation with a really fantastic team in place.
I wanted to ask you, you know, there's so many people that are selling the products, the sexual angle of the products. How did you decide to differentiate yourself versus all the different companies that are out there selling?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that we recognized was a huge opportunity for us in the sexual wellness space is that the market is really fragmented. So, there isn't really a brand yet that kind of owns that holistic space. And I think because of some of our history, we really have the opportunity to do that. I think, you know, we're one of the top five most recognizable brands in the world, which obviously gives us an interesting leg up. But we also have this 67-year history of pushing for challenging taboos, pushing boundaries, advocating for social justice and championing sexual freedom. So having that legacy behind us obviously gives us some pretty great tailwinds. And I think that while the business itself has obviously grown and changed a lot, we've really retained this legacy of advocacy for equality and free expression, sexual rights, LGBTQ plus rights.
Good for you.
And so I think that gives us it gives us really strong pillars, foundational pillars and value pillars to stand on to kind of launch into this space.
Great.
I love it. You're doing amazing stuff. So here you are, a 67-year-old business, and your core was magazines, and then you went through all this transition that you talked about. So how did you actually become a global product business, you know, with e-com as what you're doing?
It's been an exciting shift. And I think what consumers may or may not be aware is that our revenue has actually reflected that shift for decades. That's been kind of where the bulk of our money has been made. But I think one of our tasks was to both transition the consumer to understand the kinds of products and services they can expect from us, and then to make this shift operationally, internally, to be prepared to either incubate or acquire all of these different businesses in these key categories and territories. So it's definitely a shift. I think to harken back to that legacy, I think one of the things that positioned us to be able to make that change with relevance is this legacy of creativity, iconic imagery, sophisticated products and experiences, and some really rich literary and cultural content, which gives us the legitimacy to then build these businesses off the back of that. So, you know, when we talk about some of the things the brand has done, we've worked with everyone from Salvador Dali to Andy Warhol to Martin Luther King to Lizzo and Kylie Jenner and Travis Scott, which is a fairly...
Wow.
All in the same thing. So kind of a wide range. But I think, you know, from an HR perspective, which obviously is kind of the lens through which I look at a lot of this integration and transformation, it's been an exciting and also very challenging task of taking these new high-performing businesses under this PLBY ecosystem and figuring out how do we align under the same operating values? How do we align under the same culture? How do we figure out where we have these pockets of knowledge and knowledge share and make sure that we're creating best practices? How do you share capabilities and resources? And I think most importantly, and this is obviously from a very like CPO centric optic point, but how do you make every employee feel valued and like a cohesive part of the organization so that you don't feel like you have these kind of disparate businesses that are running in silos? So I think that's a lot of the work. It's been hiring fantastic people to augment a team that I was already fantastically impressed with when I initially joined. And then interestingly, I think COVID was a big forcing mechanism for us and for a lot of other businesses in ways that were both really challenging and also really important. But to use some of the obvious tools, Slack, Google Hangouts, figure out how to use the tools at our disposal to make some of these interactions feel as natural as they're going to when you aren't actually sitting with any of these people in the same room to do these integrations.
I'm just really curious on the business side. Is it a shared services model? Because you said you didn't want everyone to be siloed. So did you set up shared services across the organization where all of finance or HR or IT is handled centrally?
Yeah. So a lot of those services are shared and they certainly share a lot of the same operating principles, the same values, the same kind of key learnings, best practices, those kinds of things. We are still very much in that integration phase with these businesses. You know, Lovers in particular, we just brought on board. It's been, it's sad that I'm not entirely sure what month it is. I had to check. It's been a little over a month and a half. So we're very much in the process of doing that integrative work, but there will be a shared services model that once integrated will create a lot of those efficiencies and also make sure that we're leveraging the strengths and the talent of all of our existing resources.
So what I was going to ask you, Jenny, was when we had you speak to the C-suite event for on HR, you mentioned that some of the angles that you did to help make your employees feel more connected through COVID. Can you kind of go through some of those? Because they were very new and innovative, I thought. And I think other people might be interested in that.
Thank you. Yeah, the team's done a fantastic job, both in terms of the employees and in terms of the senior leadership team in making some pretty incredible pivots during a time that was fairly unprecedented. I'm not sure any of us went in with a strong understanding of how to navigate a pandemic, but it's an exciting skill set we're coming out of this last year with. I think one of the things we realized pretty quickly was that we needed much more frequent and much more transparent communication. So we started instituting these town halls, which we had done historically. They were quarterly initially, and that simply wasn't frequent enough. You know, in absence of having FaceTime in the office, when you're walking by people, you're seeing people in the kitchen, you're pulling people together in conference rooms, giving these updates on our business, particularly through a year where we were going to make an acquisition, we were going through the SPAC process, we were going to be, you know, going back on the public market, it became really important for us to create that connective tissue. So we started having much more regular town halls where we gave a voice to the things that are going well, but also the things we were struggling with, so that hopefully challenges we were solving for in one area of the business, we were able to provide some light into how we were solving for those issues. We also turned Tuesday mornings into meeting-free Tuesdays.
Oh, that's nice.
That's a gift.
Which, yeah. It's glorious. And in part, that's because in the office, you will take care of things in these kind of one-off communications. But if you have a portion of your population on Zoom or using Google Meet, everything has become a meeting. So you're back to back to back, and it leaves very little time for kind of that brain space to be engaged and creative and get through your actual work. So I think that really helped. We also have a really fantastic manager of corporate food and beverage services, which is a very playboy role that I don't know if terribly many companies out there have it.
Oh, tell us about this.
Yeah, exactly.
I know Google has it, but yeah.
She is a magician. Her name's Amanda, and she's lovely. And she was a huge part of what made our office feel like our office. She would make these custom lattes. She knows exactly what everyone wants to drink. She really makes everyone feel cohesive and feel like a team, makes new people feel welcome. And so one of the things we tasked her with, which was not an easy task, was how do you recreate that feeling without anyone in the office or with limited people in the office. And so she has started hosting these happy hours, and we do trivia, and she introduces new hires, and it feels as close to sitting in the office in the kitchen, kind of at that kitchen bar and having a casual conversation with coworkers as we can get. So that I think has been really helpful. And then we instituted these coffee chats, which was actually a recommendation from a candidate that I had screened. And we use a random generator to pair you with another employee, and you meet on Slack video for 15 minutes every other week.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Wow.
And so it hopefully, to the best of our ability, kind of mimics what it's like to bump into someone in the kitchen that perhaps you don't work with on a daily basis or isn't part of your day-to-day.
Was that across all the business units or just in a particular one?
So that has started, it started in Playboy. We're going to be rolling out more broadly so that it's a mechanism that we can use to help integrate some of these other businesses. But it's been really effective. I've talked to some people that, you know, I perhaps passed in the hall, but they're not part of my day to day. And it's been great to understand what they're working on, what their challenges are, how working from home is going. It's helped us inform our policies.
Yeah, no, I think that's fabulous.
So, Jenny, functionally, who do you report to? To the CFO, to the COO, to the CEO? Where do you fit in the organization?
I report into the CEO, so I report into Ben Cohn.
Ah, got it. So tell us more about the work you're personally doing as the Chief People Officer. Is it just the Playboy, or is it all of PLBY Group?
It's all of PLBY Group, which for me includes it includes a couple actual key functions. It includes the HR function. It includes our IT function as well, and then any of our office operations functions. And it's everything from it's sort of a wide-ranging role. It's everything from kind of mapping out the employee experience and understanding what you want that ecosystem to look and feel like. To figuring out kind of what those values are and how they manifest. So how do you want those to appear in our interview process? How do you want them to appear in our annual review process? How do you want to hold employees accountable for embodying the behaviors that create an inclusive work environment where people can do their best work? So I do a lot of work on that, a lot of work with the training on those things. It's also it's an interesting brand for a lot of reasons, but of course, because we are in the pleasure and leisure space, we also talk about a lot of concepts that are fairly unique to our office and are not often topics of conversation that you would be having in other places of work.
Like what? Give us some examples.
Yeah.
So things related to sex and sexuality, gender identity, race, ethnicity, and a lot of our products that fall into kind of the sexual wellness category. So part of the work that my team does is help create trainings that essentially serve as, they're like guardrails or like bumper bowling, so that you can have conversations.
Oh, to be safe.
About potentially very sensitive topics that are really core to people's sense of identity and self in a way that feels safe and feels like people can participate. So that's been academically and philosophically and really tactically, I think, one of the most interesting parts of being in this role at Playboy.
And it requires a skill set to be able to listen, to digest, and then to also manage that conversation so that people feel safe and included, right? But that they don't go down a path that could cause them to be in trouble and the company to be in trouble too.
Or to make someone else feel uncomfortable. And I think, you know, it's a lot of this last year has been a big focus for a lot of reasons on a lot of our DEI work. I think with COVID, with BLM, with a lot of the anti-Asian racism, it's been an incredibly tough year for our employees. So creating that safe space and also acknowledging some of the challenges that they're going through, not just on the professional side, but at home and interpersonally, is a really important part of supporting them. So we've been doing a lot of work. As I think I may have mentioned on our panel, we've been working with an external company who really works almost like an internal part of our team called Yardstick. And they've been helping us with a lot of these DEI best practices and making sure that we are operationalizing these best practices into every element of our business so that this isn't kind of a top-down, we value diversity approach, but it's an approach through which we make all of our business decisions. And that part's been exciting.
Oh, that's great.
Wow. Talk about as a global brand, you're like a change maker, not just in the US, but how do you take these values that we're talking about here in DE&I and export them?
Yeah. So it's interesting because the brand obviously resonates differently in different parts of the world. And it can mean different things to different people. I think the focus for us this year has been to really ensure that we reflect between our four walls what we say we value, and that in between our four walls, we look as close to the population that we service outside of those four walls. So a lot of that has, again, is closely tied to our legacy. I think that when you have, the legacy that we have, it might be easy to say like, well, we've checked the box or we've done that thing. For us, we actually look at it very differently, and we look at it as an intense responsibility to continue to express those values and to use our visibility as a change mechanism to encourage vendors that we work with to adhere to these values, to encourage influencers to reflect these values. I think we have a really unique opportunity to really be impactful. And so that's something that that we obviously are doing both domestically and internationally.
Hey, Jenny, can you tell us, you know, obviously you have this super fabulous role now. What can you kind of walk through your career and what kind of led you to this role? What took you into this position so that others can understand?
Sure. So I went to UCLA, which was great. Loved it. Go Bruins. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I graduated. I had worked throughout college in a variety of different roles. I sold advertising. I nannied for a family. I did a whole host of kind of odds and ends. And I really, the only thing I was confident of when I graduated was that I wasn't moving home. So I would have done just about anything. Yeah, very close to my family, love them, but I was ready to adult, or so I thought. And so I took a job as the communications manager of a small web design company, and they were doing some branding work. I was essentially in sales. I was selling website design and development to clients, local clients here in LA.
Okay.
Arguably, I was uniquely terrible at that job.
Honesty's good.
I really liked the people.
I thought you were good at it. You were good at it.
Not so much. No. I really liked the technology side of it. I found I had a real passion for designers and developers. The kind of that maker culture. I couldn't do either of those things, but I really liked being surrounded by those people. But I hated sales. And so when I eventually transitioned, I went into a recruiting company that focused on designers and developers. And that was a fantastic experience because I talked to thousands of people over the course of my tenure. I learned a lot about what motivates people to stay places. How do you attract and retain best-in-class talent? And how do you coach people through the process of making a job change? As a recruiter or someone in an HR capacity, you talk to so many people that do that, it's really easy to forget that for this person that you're hand-holding through this process, this is a huge life-changing move for them. So I really liked that, but I felt disconnected from the end result. I felt like I would meet fantastic people, I would place them in incredible opportunities, and I'd say, good luck, let me know how it goes. Keep me posted. And I wanted to feel like I was a part of the actual end result of that build. I wanted to kind of make my bed and lie in it. So I eventually transitioned in-house into recruiting and into HR and started working for several businesses over time that were growing that function from the ground up. So businesses that had 30 people or 35 people and no kind of people operations function, so to speak, and building that into their practices. So figuring out how they reach out to the best talent and how they create the systems and processes around those people to make them successful and keep them engaged. And so I was at Red Interactive Agency prior to Playboy. I had been there for a little less than a decade. And had been part of, it's a long time.
It's a long time.
And really got to grow a department there, which was fun. So when Playboy first reached out, I thought I'll take the call. And like, you got, what is Playboy doing? Certainly fascinated enough to take that call, but I didn't necessarily understand the breadth and depth of the business that they were building and what the opportunity would be. So, came on board with, you know, understanding that Ben had some really lofty aspirations for this brand. And it's been really exciting to see so many of them come to fruition over the course of the last 2.5 years.
Yeah, very creative role you have. You don't think of it as creative, but it's very creative.
Mm-hmm. You're doing amazing work. You're making a difference. You are such a powerful woman. Let me ask you, either personally or professionally, what is it you're most proud of?
Oh, that's such a great, it's such a great question and it's so hard to answer. I think I probably have two. I think one of the things I'm really proud of right now is the DEI work that we've been doing. And really garnering the support of the executive team to invest a lot of resources, both monetarily and in terms of emotional investment from people who really see this as an important next step for us. We're in the process of launching these PRGs, which I guess would be called ERGs elsewhere, employee resource groups, but we're calling them PLBY resource groups. this has been incredibly motivating for me and for a lot of our people. They're voluntary and they're employee initiated, at least for PLBY. But they bring members together that have either a shared identity or a shared background, and we provide opportunities for professional development, personal development, social networking, collaboration. And we assign an executive sponsor to each of these groups that is reflective of the community that they're representing. And it allows them to help set goals, to advocate for themselves, and to ensure that our policies are really reflective of these values that we embody. So our PRG program will be launching this year. It's going to have the initial grouping, I think, will be 8, but we're leaving room for other employees to come forward and say, here's a group I want to start, and I think it would be motivating. So, you know, ideally, if done right, we're expecting these PRGs to really enhance culture, to give people a sense of belonging and a sense of community, to make sure that we are promoting career advancement and professional development equitably across the organization. And ideally, these PRG efforts also support and drive business because you're letting these ideas percolate from different areas within the organization, which I think is really exciting. I think the other thing that I'm really proud of this year and so proud of my team because they've brought some really innovative ideas to the table over the course of COVID and some of our other work, but it's taking these values and translating them into policies that put our money where our mouth is. And that can be hard to do. It can be hard to kind of identify where are the opportunities to codify the things that we support. But one of the things that we've done is I actually teased it, I think, in the panel that we did a couple weeks ago, but we've gotten sign off on fertility benefits.
Wow. That's fabulous. That's very innovative.
And this is something that was super important to us. We know as an employer that 50% of millennials consider fertility to be a core part of healthcare coverage. And a lot of benefit plans don't provide anything for it. We know that 65% or more of adults say that they would switch jobs just to gain fertility benefits. And we anecdotally have heard of people that have either stayed at jobs or left to go to other jobs because of things like coverage for freezing eggs. So for us, also really core to Playboy in particular, based on some of our advocacy, 63% of LGBTQ plus people expect to use assisted reproductive technology, foster care, or adoption in order to become parents.
Which you would expect, yeah.
Which you'd expect. And then specifically here in LA, which it obviously isn't relevant for all of our business, but for our office here, the median age for pregnancy is 34. And 34 and older is considered a geriatric pregnancy.
Right.
Right. Which I would intensely love for us to rebrand. That'll be next on my list.
Right. That doesn't sound very good.
But moving forward, we know that there's going to be a variety of family journeys that we're going to want to support. So putting this in place so that employees going through any phase, families that are same sex, even single parent families that want to start a family without a partner, the coverage plan that we're putting in place has a really broad range. So things like that make me really proud when I look at the way that our team is really taking these core values and is finding ways to codify them in our policies.
It's definitely a differential for you being as an employer and offering those benefits. Diane, I don't know if you know this, but I'm going to tell you that today's Jenny's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Jenny.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, better and better.
Thank you.
Yeah, and her dad is coming out to visit her, which will be nice.
Yes, yeah. So thank you for celebrating your birthday with us.
Happy to.
Yes.
And the C-suite audience.
Yes, so. And Jenny, you are a trailblazer. You know what? As you were telling us all this about your ESGs and the work you're doing, Playboy, they are so blessed to have you in this role because you are certainly a driving force to put all these things in place and really make a global difference. Truly. I wish I had an award for you.
And you truly support women.
You do. You support everybody in the organization.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's really nice.
So we want to thank you so much, Jenny, for today.
Jenny Sade, Chief People Officer.
We also want to thank our sponsors, Google, which is one of our premier sponsors, Converge Technology, which is an IT solutions provider. Manette is a nationwide law firm. Woodruff Sawyer does employee benefits. And Amplify Professional Services is an executive search and IT consulting firm. So thank you so much for listening. And Diane, if you want to do the wrap up.
Yes, thank you for listening. Listen, hit the subscribe button, please. It helps people find us. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, anywhere you find your podcasts. Follow us on social media. We're on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. And we love hearing from you. Don't be shy. Send us an email to media@csuite, and that's csweet.org. And do check out our website. That's www.csweet.org. And we thank you again, and we look forward to having you join us next time. Thank you, Jenny Sade, Chief People Officer of PLBY Group.